With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/JA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Morning, people. How are ye? 11 days out from Christmas. We probably have our last Renault Irish Examiner hurling show. Well, TJ wants a Christmas special, so I think we'll have to oblige him on that one. And a lot of our listeners have been looking for that as well. So, yeah, I think that could be a runner, maybe Christmas Eve or the day before, or something like that. But morning after the final, lads. I'm not bad. TJ, how are you?
I'm good.
How do you mean good? Like, do you have anything at all to drink?
I had very little. I was at home. I watched the
You're like the Kinney Crow, no, TJ.
We can get used to this. Very, very enjoyable day at home watching the game. Great result for Limerick. And you know, we have a substantial booked for 2 p.m. today in Limerick. I'm meeting a couple of friends, actually four real hurling experts, four townies as I call them. Les Whelan, who probably one of the hardest men in Limerick. Eddie O'Neill, Donald Power, and David Campbell. These boys now would like to think that they know an awful lot more about hurling than you did.
Will they tell you about short puckouts and long puckouts and everything like that?
Yeah, I got a couple of WhatsApps from during the game about referees, about puckouts, about changes, everything. To be honest, they should be on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I was right beside Donald Gold Cusack, as you saw yesterday, you know. When I mentioned the fantabulous case.
Fantabulous,
well, we use that word in Clarecastle because Christy Moore, in singing the song The Airport Up in Knock, said he built the fantabulous church go hauling on the whole. And it's Sparrow's party piece, so it gets used a bit, you know. So sorry if it came out wrong there for the National Airwaves, but anyway. But he was just saying, had me some comfort quid, like he says, do that deal, like he can go long, he can go short, like, but if he goes long, Tom Morris, he's not the biggest half forward in the world, like, and he still wins his own ball. And there's a lot to be said for it, lads, isn't there?
There's a lot to be said for it, but you can't take anything away from Nicky. He's an integral part of the system. He's reading of us, he's shot stopping everything. He's a massive player of the system. So I would say there's probably four or five key players, and he's one of them in terms of what they do. Like, there's other players could come and go and slot in and do job. No, obviously, all of them are awesome, but one fellow said to me this morning, where is Richie English and Mike Casey going to fit into the plan? I'm going to say that's a different problem for a different year. Yeah.
Jeez, I said it to John Kiley, would you believe I met him? I was doing the 6 o'clock news slot with Ivan. But yeah. No, I met John and I just said, what are you going to do with Mikey Casey and Richie English, Johnny? Well, he just got a fit of laughing, and I'd say it's the kind of problem you'd love to have. We're also joined by Mr. Landers and Mr. Brian Hogan. How are you, Huggy?
Hey, Dalo. How's things?
Good this morning, though. Not too bad.
Fresh.
Anyway, like.
You're fresh?
I'm freshish. Do you know what I mean? I was off from work. How are you, Mark?
Top form, Dalo, right? Yeah.
There was a few lads on Twitter again, Mark, giving out about the run of the horse.
Didn't I give you the information? I said, not today. Should need a run. First time back in Dundalk.
He was very honest.
Keep the money in the pocket for Christmas. There might be another day. Like, and she was belted out for Wednesday night, and I think she might be entered for this Friday night, the 18th. So a bit like Santa now. I have been a good boy all year, Dela, and I'm really hoping that Santa will deliver. So maybe might the Queen.
Well, you've been absolutely useless on your predictions in this show, Mark. Like, so I suppose
I'll stick to the club action, Dela. Like, I leave
you were good in the club and you were good in the horse.
I leave the intercounty stuff to yourself and TJ, two former managers, in fairness. Two top-class managers now, mind you.
Thank you. Yeah. You know your stuff
thanks,
on that.
Thanks, Matt.
Lads, it was an unbelievable day. It was an awful privilege to be there, obviously. we would have said that. And I was awful sorry my mates of 25 years ago weren't there with me. But a nice touch that got me to brought out the cup early on today. It was nice. It was a nice privilege. And I know we got used to this stuff all year, but still very hard to get used to it for the All-Ireland final, isn't it? No Artain band, no Michael D meeting the players, stuff like that. You know, all year, yeah, those things will escape you, but final day, it's hard to get used to them.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, there's no doubt about it. And I was sitting down at home with the kids and Jackie just trying to watch the game and stuff. But you'd also love to see the build up, and as you rightly say, the president meeting the players. And look, as a player, Dale, you know what that's like on the day. It's when you're going over to the red cap, but the president is coming down. Mary McAleese is who met me, and that was a great privilege, I must say. And it's something, it's a huge tradition, but I suppose in the times that we're in, we have to go with the social distancing and all that. But even the Artain band not to be there yesterday, it took away from, you know, having the music in the background, I suppose, of the boys drumming away there. But look, I suppose that won't worry Limerick today or yesterday. It was down to business, and what an ultra professional performance from the Limerick men.
Yeah, one of the things that Gerard Hegarty mentioned in his kind of, the full match was actually live on TG Cahir again shortly afterwards. So when I got back here to the hotel, I was only flicking, and the next thing, the match was only 10 minutes. So watched it again with the co-commentary of Pat Flory as well. And it was good to watch it again. Like, some things you think you see when you're there, you really see, you know. And it was lovely to watch it again. One of the things afterwards then on the news that man of the match, Gerard Hegarty, said was like, it was a pity the cup wasn't allowed into the dressing room. And was that a bit OTT, TJ, do you think?
I definitely think so, yeah. They all handled it. Look, I fully appreciate, I suppose, the GAA are trying to send the right signals. I think it was difficult for the players coming home last night after winning All-Ireland, not having an official function that they could share with their families and their partners and their friends. That's the difficult side of it. But I suppose the reality is we have to be, I suppose, cognizant that it was great to get a championship. Definitely great now to get a championship, the fact that Limerick won it. These guys were in the shape of their lives. Everything fell into place from yesterday. They produced a magic performance, a little bit like Kilkenny, like in the day, we'll say, of their heyday, to produce their best on final day. So I suppose all the other stuff, whilst we can complain about it, the key thing was that Limerick won the game. This team deserved that second All-Ireland. We kind of all felt that. They are a great team now, officially. I would have felt it anyway beforehand. But yeah, just to get the performance yesterday was the icing on the cake. 10 out of 10 for the year in terms of games, and 10 out of 10 in terms of performance, and just, I suppose, 10 out of 10 for the overall players and management for this group.
Yeah. They're beginning to become or look like Huggy. I know they have a long road to go. They're beginning to look Kilkenny-esque, as TJ says, aren't they?
I mean, at the moment, they're the dominant side. I think you can't argue with the numbers that TJ is throwing out there. All year, I called it from the beginning of the year. I, when you asked me, I think on one of the first shows, I said Limerick for Munster champions and Limerick for the All-Ireland. Ultimately, it's hard to look past them, you know. I felt, particularly after last year's defeat to Kilkenny, the little bit I know of this, like, I don't know these bunch of players personally, but just looking in from the outside and looking at John Kiley and the mentality of them, I knew that was going to be something that was going to drive these guys. You know, winning one All-Ireland was massive for Limerick as a county and for Limerick hurling. But for this particular group of players, you know, a lot of these guys have had huge success underage and, you know, colleges, etc. And, you know, you always got the sense that one All-Ireland was never going to be enough, you know, and they were definitely hurting after that defeat last year. You know, they were caught to a certain extent by what Kilkenny brought that day. And, you know, to go and back it up, I suppose, you know, and with a year that's been completely disjointed, she couldn't plan, you know. And I think John Kiley's referred to what they did during the lockdown in terms of Zoom calls and the buy-in from the players, you know. So to go and, you know, stick to the plan, if you like, you know, adapt to the different situation and still come out the end of it at the end of the year and deliver and probably what they all promised each other, which was to get back and win in Ireland. You know, massive respect for that group of players, you know. And to be fair, like, two All-Irelands in 3 years now, you know, I think this team and the likelihood is they'll certainly go on and, you know, be favourites for another one or two at least.
Yeah, I'd say there's definitely a couple of more there in the locker, but who knows? TJ, they did stuff like, Mark, maybe you weren't aware now because you don't be on the social media, but they did stuff like TikTok dancing and all that during the lockdown. Will O'Donoghue, I think, was the most famous. He put on a right show there. He made a holy show of himself, I would have thought, but he didn't make a holy show of himself on the field any day he was out this year.
No, and Declan referred to a cooking competition as well, as which is internal. I didn't see that, but I think that's what the lockdown did to teams and groups and clubs, was they kind of just brought out something different. The lads used the opportunity to raise money for Milford Hospice here locally as well, which went down exceptionally well. And they're just like, they're heroes locally now. Like, they would have been after 2018. Obviously, they're driven and they wanted to do more. Like, 6 trophies in the 3 years, like 2 Munster Championships, 2 National Leagues, 2 All-Ireland titles. Like, very, very, very difficult to kind of argue with anything that's going on there in terms of their approach. On the field is just incredible. And just everyone seems to have got a handle on off the field, and as they just carry themselves really well. So all positive, Delo, in 2020, which is fantastic for Limerick and fantastic to read about.
And even, like, I suppose, you know, I look at Kilkenny, and like, they've won so many All-Irelands down through the years, and they're so humble. I thought the interviews that all the players did, and even John Kiley as well, they were fantastic straight after the game. Like, you know, you can see there's a groundedness about this panel of players, and six trophies won over the last 3 years. It's magnificent. And they're a credit to the county. And I suppose when you rolled out on Friday night from the Oval Office, TJ, it was a big help. But I feel it's going to cost him another 3.2 million this time round, because he gave 100 grand to all the county boards the last time. So will he double down now and give?
I'm sure Mark, he'll keep doing his best for you to kind of keep you afloat. But look, he's been influential. Dale knows that as well as myself. We'll probably touch on it a while ago. It's just, look, there was a vision there a number of years ago. Like, go back to 10 years ago, and Shane touched it last night in the Sunday game. You know, Limerick wasn't in a great place. But
you were on strike, TJ. Let's face it.
Let's
weren't on your third strike like Cork now.
No, it wasn't in a good...
1 second out, but just before you got out, like, after our first strike, we went to 4 months to finals at 4 All-Ireland straight after it now.
And what did you cause another one after that for?
No, but that was the minute. Our first strike was about the county board.
Does he blame someone else? Okay. But I think the strategic planning and the vision, and I think this might sound a little bit mad at the moment, but the vision that maybe that Dublin had a number of years ago maybe was reflected by Limerick. I'm not saying that we'd be anything like a Dublin football team at the moment, but it doesn't happen overnight. And if you see the physicality of our Limerick lads yesterday, the shape, and a great win for the minors as well, Dale. Like, their seventh Munster final in 8 years coming up in the minor. The 20s, like, Cork were definitely the better side in extra time, no doubt about that. But they put in a good second half. And I just read your piece in the paper this morning about just a couple of players there. Maybe like Colin Coughlin, a wing back, Mackie Quinlan, Brian O'Grady, full back, winter midfield.
Colin O'Neill.
But Colin O'Neill looks
two
like
more years.
Yeah, 2 more years. Like, so, like, you take the current Limerick team where they're at, and let's say move them on a year or two, and then you've got this guy, a young guy, probably chomping at the bit, like, who's like, looks like he's got all the attributes to go and play senior hurling for Limerick. So that takes time, that takes effort, that takes money, that takes vision. And I suppose that is what's required, and they just really at the cutting edge of everything that's right about hurling at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose if you just looked at the game, I suppose, Hoggy, the only one maybe didn't have a 8 out of 10 game would be Graham Mull, and he has done that so often for them. Just Graham didn't get going, maybe, you know. And obviously, look, it was a toss-up between himself, Flanagan, Casey anyway. But the rest, I mean, it was an unbelievable team performance, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, that's I suppose in itself is a sign of the strength they have, you know, that they're not reliant on 1, 2, or 3 players. You know, Mulcahy had a massive game 2 years ago, and you know, you look at the spread of scores, you know, 9 scores, you know, 4 of the forwards, but their whole half back line scored, you know, and one of their midfielders. So I mean, it's very difficult to defend against that when you're focused on those 2 wing forwards and trying to curtail their influence, and you've got the likes of Kyle Hayes and Dermot Burns launching points over the bar from, you know, 60, 70 metres, or in Kyle Hayes' case, bombing past you, putting balls over the bar from 40 yards. You know, the threat comes from all angles, you know, and we've spoken about it, or I mentioned before, how they can play it anyway. And and all great teams are like that. You know, if you want to go down into the trenches, they'll go down there with you, no problem. You know, they'll play through the lines. Obviously, that's their preference, is to execute that real kind of sharp precision play. But when it's called on, they can go along, you know, and you see the way they're able to isolate Galan and Flanagan and the movements, and the boys touched on it there and the analysis, the way that they're constantly moving, giving an option for that ball into the corner, you know. And I had to laugh. I was watching a Laker and a Gale there a couple of weeks ago. I was under Socrates, Laker and a Gale, and Lucy was on it, you know. I got a college of Lucy, and they were just referencing one match about playing the diagonal ball in. He was like, Jesus, why didn't we play this before? But you see that the evolution in terms of the way this particular team play, where it's never a kind of a 50-50 ball. It's always an angled ball, you know, to the advantage of the forwards. And where it's not on, they're holding it or recycling it, and then they're moving it. And yeah, it's just an awesome team display, you know. And you're never going to get in any match at any level. You're never going to get a situation where 15 players, you know, are all hitting nines or tens. You know, you're going to have some guys who are hurling above themselves, you know, and certain guys step up to the plate, and you know. But overall, just a real team performance. And even though Graham might have been, you know, maybe below par by his standards in terms of scoring, you can be sure the work rate, what he brought off the ball, exactly. Yeah. I think that's you know, what's expected of the group of players. And yeah, look, the superlatives, you know, you can go on and on about it. And I think Mark mentioned it there about, I had written down no ego. You know, that's the thing. You know, where they've had huge success over the last couple of years, and particularly for a county maybe which has been striving and so hungry for that success for years, you know, that sometimes when they get a taste of it, they can kind of lose that focus, you know. And Ryan would have been always, the biggest enemy is complacency. That's the biggest thing he hated, you know. And when he saw any sign of complacency in the group, he'd weed it out. And there's no sign of that with these Limerick boys, you know. They're just, you know, they're just very grounded, you know, very kind of humble, but I suppose hugely confident in their own ability as well, you know. And yeah, massive team performance yesterday.
Yeah, the intensity looked like it was right up there in the opening quarter and probably the second quarter, and certainly up to half time. Like, that's what it felt like watching it. Like, you there, did you feel the same?
I did in the first half, TJ. I thought after half time, Watford give up the ghost, a few of them a bit.
Yeah.
Ozzy didn't, Stephen Bennett didn't, Desi Hutchinson didn't. Except that he Sean Finn hanging off him. You could let Sean Finn at some cornerback. Let's see him up close in the second half. Jesus. Yeah, he wouldn't like to be on him. But I felt a few of them around the middle sort of stop in Greyhound parlance. They stopped chasing as hard as they could. Yeah. And that allowed Limerick then. Like, if you think about the very first score Limerick got after half time, Stephen Bennett missed a free, we'll say.
Yeah,
it would have dragged it back to two. No, it was a long range three. But then there was a high ball in and broke between Finn and Hutchinson, and Barry Nash superbly came in, swiped it out of the schmozzle, looked up, spotted Burns, hurley pass. Burns hurley pass to Dara Donovan. Now, Dara Donovan couldn't let the ball in, as Brian has alluded to, but there was no one moving at that stage. So he took his time, waited for Kyle Hayes to move outside him, up from left half back, give it to Kyle. So, well, Kyle could have shot for a point from here. Pinged it to the far corner. Flanagan, one touch, hand, 2 yards in front of his man at that stage, over the bar. Like, I mean, for me, that was just control of the situation, you know? Like Burns could have gone long. Dara Donovan could have gone long. Kyle could have gone for a point. But no, they waited until the two guys inside, either Galan or Flanagan, had made their move. And nearly that's what's happening, TJ, I think. That they wait for the guys inside to make the move. They have enough confidence to take an extra pass if they need to. Whereas we were drilled all our lives, let the ball up fast.
Yeah.
The forwards just wanted fast balls. But these guys are waiting nearly to see the runs.
Yeah, but there's been a little bit of an evolution, sorry, Mark, in the game plan. Like, I think up to recently, and I'm not sure, like, inside who will take the credit for the move of Kyle Hayes to wing back has been a little bit different, right? Like, before, like, Dermot Burns, Declan Hannan and Dan Morrissey, you were sure they were zonal, they stood across that half-back line. This is a little bit different, right? So the movement of Keane Lynch to centre-forward, where he attracts an awful lot of attention, where it kind of frees up the two boys a little bit more because you just can't let Keane free. And then that license for Kyle to bomb on with his physique and pace, let's say, at intervals, which suits him. And then we say if the opposition play two inside and you have an extra man with Barry Nash who slots into that wing back role, that game plan evolving, coupled with, I just see now, they don't play a ball. If they're inside their own 45, the ball won't go long, right? You have to work that ball in between the two 45s. Then you have to free up a player who's facing the, we say, your own, you're facing your scoring goals, and he has to play a ball that's better than 50-50. And the movement inside has to be spot on. You can see the roaring and shouting. The movement has to be there all the time, all the time. And you can see once or twice, even Gillam is flat, right? And he still has to make that run. Like, so that's, I won't say it's as simplistic as that, but there has been a little bit of a change. And like, they have it perfected. They have the opposition as to what they're going to do perfected. And I think it was touched on last night. Like, there's a real teacher trait in the management team. Like, John Kiley's a teacher. Paul Kinnerk's a teacher. Al Cunningham's a teacher. Shane O'Donnell's a teacher. So like, they have that.
Don O'Grady's a shopkeeper.
Don's a shopkeeper. But they have that. Teachers have that added edge of just being able to teach and get their, we'll say, philosophy across maybe that little bit better. But it's just really good. They're very much in tune, and the game plan has been really, really fine-tuned. No, you have to couple their passing to hand, their physicality, their tackling. Everything is spot on, and they're like, their shape. This has come over a long number of years. Like, Mark Lyons was in there a couple of years. Joe O'Connor was there. And now Mikey Kiley has taken it on. And like, they're just specimens of men, all of them. Like, I wouldn't like to get hit by any of them.
Yeah, but the one thing that strikes me, TJ, right throughout the game is that wherever the ball is, there seems to be two or three Limerick fellas swarming the opposition. That's one thing. And all of a sudden, when the ball comes out, there seems to be men free everywhere. That's the one thing that every time a Limerick man seems to get the ball, he looks up, there's a man 10 yards, 15 yards away. And I'm kind of wondering, where are the opposition? Why aren't they back in the loose?
If you watch Jackie Turtle's piece last night and a couple of puckouts and a bit of movement, right, you get an idea of it, right? The reality is, like, certainly Gerard Hegarty, Tom Morrissey, possibly Kyle Hayes, they're probably touching 13, 14 kilometres in the 70 minutes. Like, so that's very, very difficult. And they're just on the move all the time. Like, Gerard Hegarty never stops. He pops up in different corners. And then it's the boys' job to find him, and by God, they find him. But
does it mean that the opposition aren't fit enough to go with him? Or are they actually just saying, I'm going to leave him go and stay zoned? Sorry, Brian.
Yeah, no, I think the two are linked, Mark, in that you're saying, you know, and when Limerick swarm, you know, and it resembles to what we would have done, you know, when they're swarming, you know, say the Waterford backs, those Waterford backs have not been exposed to that level of physicality, that intensity. You know, and Limerick are swarming in groups. They're, you know, it's that unity, I suppose, in and clear kind of thought in terms of what they're doing. Once they do that, once they grind down Waterford, then if they do hold on to the ball, they're coming out. They make the wrong decision because they're under so much pressure. I think we saw at one stage in the first half where they threw a hand pass, you know, and it was a 50-50 hand pass because he was under so much pressure coming out with the ball. Having rode two tackles, you know. So what Limerick do really well is they get numbers in around the ball. They don't foul. Well, they try and limit the extent to which they're fouling, you know, and get the hands up. They're so powerful that even just running into these guys, you know, I think Hegarty, I can't remember who he hit in the first
half. Jack Prendergast.
That's right. Well, he just opened his chest up. Jack Prendergast ran into him and he floored him on the ground, you know. And that wears you down. And then as a result, you kind of start making the wrong options because when you're not used to that, you know, it's a shock, you know, and if you look at it, like even a half time, Limerick were only 3 points up. Now, I know they had one or two goal chances, but it was the toll that it took on the Waterford players in that first half. You know, Limerick went in 3 points up, but the damage is done. You know, I think you mentioned to Dalo how some of the players, the Waterford players, you know, their head started to drop in the second half because they were just mentally exhausted because they hadn't experienced that kind of attrition. And then they start clearing balls to what looks like free Limerick lads, you know.
And Hoagie, on Thursday on the preview show, we had Ken Hogan, great obvious, great knowledge, obviously, yeah, like yourself. But Mark suggested maybe that to be time to put Kyle Hayes back in his ass for one of the Waterford players.
Off you go, Mark.
It went around on Twitter there a bit last night. I know you're not on Twitter, Mark, so you never hear about that stuff.
Thanks be to God I'm not on Twitter.
Do you know what trending is, Mark?
I just put the search button on Twitter and what's trending, and it was something like Arsenal beaten again, Larry. Sorry. But then it was Landers, number two, and he's not even on Twitter. Getaway Queen was three.
But Dale, to go back, I'm just on Hoagie's point there. the press is very educated as well, right? And like the amount of intel that they would have done on the opposition to know when is the right time to strike, when the collective time to press is there. Like they all work individually very hard, but then there's just a collective press at a time when they just snuff it and just give the opportunity. The defence no chance at all to get rid of the ball. Like, they just do it exceptionally well. And like Shane O'Donnell's role there, right? Like they would have intel on everybody. It was just off the charts. And that's what's going on behind the scenes. Like obviously the Kinnerk factor, Delo, is huge and that his record speaks for itself. But they just like on all areas of the game, whether it's the conditioning, right? Whether it's the fitness, like whether it's their hurling in terms of the ball to hand, whether it's their tackling, but then there's the whole like method and education side of it as well. They're all very clued into what they do. They press at the right time. They use the ball well in the puck out. So it's very close to the complete performance for sure.
Yeah, before Mark comes in there, I brought him in, Mark, before the All-Ireland minor final in 16. Paul is obviously with the football academy and I was running the hurling academy at the time. And I said, look at this swarm tackling. Like you seem to have it down to fine art with Clare as well. Like, you know, when he was with Clare and he says, would you know when to go at it, Delo? And I says, I wouldn't have a clue, Paul. Tell us, shoot, swarm. Yeah. Bees is the only swarm I know of here, kid. Yeah. But he said, right, let me give you my take on it before I introduce it to the player. So he said, as soon as a player makes a slight mistake, I don't know where you did, took up on it, Hoagie, because you were brilliant at it as well. But then I said, look, just go through with the players and see what way they take to it. And if they don't take to it during the training session, we can always leave it, you know. But he said, lads, when would you swarm tackle a fella? And I mean swarm now. I mean no more than three people. Very rare that a fourth person is in that tackle. So you might think there's six or seven on top of a fella, but it's three really is his golden rule. Now, look, the fourth fella could be nearby, so it could look like there was four. But as soon as you smell a mistake, like just so I hand pass the ball out to you, Mark, and you don't take it in your hand first time, or you miscontrol it in the hurley and it drops to the ground. But no, you have time to pick it up again. But that's the time to swarm. Right, because he's after losing 2 seconds and you have a chance to swarm. Yeah. So you leave your man, you go and swarm. That was the gist I took out of it anyway.
Yes. And like that's the player who has missed the ball is automatically under pressure because he knows in his own half the side that he should have controlled the ball first time. He can hear the footsteps coming in from either side, and next while there's a hand on him or there's a hurley on him, and he's under pressure because he knows he needs to get his head up and look, where am I going to get this ball off him? And then all of a sudden, if you have two or three fellas around you, you're inclined to panic. And I thought that happened in the first play of the game yesterday. Ian Kenny won a ball, he came out, he got bumped, he dropped the ball recycled over to Jamie Byrne, and I said, this is safe now, he's definitely going to get out. And I don't know, one of the midfielders hit him, a slap, and he dropped it, and the ball was recycled out to Tom Morrissey for the first point. And that, to me, set the tone from the get-go. I thought Limerick's physicality was unbelievable yesterday, and I suppose, when you go and look at the tackles, they had 49 tackles versus 36. I mean, they had nearly 50% more tackles than Limerick or than Waterford yesterday, and that was a telling factor. But I'd have to say, Dale, I thought Fergal Horgan was hard enough on Waterford yesterday in the overall context. And I think the fact that he's from Tipperary might have worked against Liam Cahill because, you know, like everybody was saying, and you saw the pictures that were going around in 3 or 4 days in advance. I got them on Instagram now, actually. I am on Instagram.
Are you on Instagram, Mark?
That's the only social media thing I am.
You on Facebook, Mark?
I think somebody signed me up to that as well.
Okay.
Definitely not on Twitter. But
you might as well be like it tomorrow because we're getting more mentions on it.
So I suppose, but going back to the Fergal Horgan thing, the Tom Morrissey gave Austin Gleeson a little bit of a tip in the cojones, right? And the ball squirted out to Cian Lynch, who gave it on to Hannon over the bar. That should have been a free in my opinion, to Waterford. And I thought all the 50-50 decisions early in the game went against Waterford when they were the team that actually needed to get those chances. And Jack Fagan, I know, I go back to
where did he hit him? Where did he hit him, Morrissey?
The cojones.
Sorry.
I actually thought he hit him half as... I thought he actually hit him half as down the toilet, but it seemed to be someplace else. But anyway,
it was definitely a free, you know, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely. In my opinion, it was definitely. I thought he was harder than Gleeson now as well, I must say, because there was a couple of tackles there that I felt that he was, you know, he's a big boy. He's well able to take care of himself. But I thought he was harder than Gleeson individually yesterday as well, Fergalorgan.
Now, what do you think, TJ?
Look, we would have been happy with Fergal Hogan's overall referee. I didn't think it was a major
that
factor in the game.
Mind.
Yeah, I would say early on, yeah. Like, you could have a case there where maybe one or two Limerick guys could have got a yellow card or whatever, but certainly one definitely very early. But I think overall, I didn't think it influenced the game. I thought he left it flow a little bit more. He certainly didn't dish the cards as they had been doing earlier in the championship, but I think this.
Even after the double save, which was fantastic now out of Stephen O'Keefe, and I thought the boys, they hit the balls on the money, but the ball broke out to Graham Mulcahy, who mishit the ball, and Caelan Lyons gave him the slightest touch across the helmet,
yeah.
And he gave him free, and the opportunity was gone, and I thought all those small little things went to Limerick, and like Conor Prunty in the first half had Glenn out on the sideline. Why he didn't give him an extra little bit of a push to put him out over the sideline for the line ball, I don't know. But Gallant to swing around and come back.
What a score.
And snap the ball over.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was just unbelievable stuff. Like, wow. Shane Flanagan had done it before. Like,
yeah.
I'm not taking away from Limerick now. I just, they were brilliant yesterday. And the score hit, like, that's 24 points out of 30 from play. That is massive, massive. But some of the scores they hit yesterday were off the charts.
Yeah, we're talking about the physicality of Limerick and wearing down Watford, which is those type of points just. So, they kill you. You know, I mean, like, you do everything right. Conor Prunty did everything okay, apart from maybe just giving him an extra bit of a nudge. But,
yeah.
But
how could you defend better, Hoagie?
You can't. He did everything. You know, he showed him the sideline, yeah. kept him goal side. Yeah. It was almost over. Gallant just had a quick glance and just popped over the shoulder. It was like he was just hitting the ball over his shoulder, like you would out in the training pitch for the crack, and just over the bar. And you're kind of looking at that, and you're going, like, there's not much more I can do now. And I think, to be fair to Gallant, I think it was almost his strength as well to be able to hold himself in on the pitch, you know, on the pitch.
Yeah,
but there was a couple of instances like that. I think Tom Morrissey was the same. Again, coming across the pitch, you know, in the second, just kind of over the shoulder, like almost over the guy that was trying to block him.
Unreal.
Yeah. So, and they, you know, you're doing everything right as a defender. You've closed the space down. You're pushing him out, you know, away from goal. And then he throws the ball up from 60 yards out and strokes it over like he is from 20 yards out, you know. And they kill you, you know. You're kind of.
But Limerick's tactics also upset Waterford early on as well, because it was obvious that Waterford had picked Caelan Lyons to pick up Garrod Hegarty and Kevin Moran to pick up Tom Morrissey. And then Limerick switched their two wing forwards to the opposite sides, and both Kevin Moran and Caelan Lyons were uncomfortable in the two wings that they were actually on. I felt actually for both the wing backs, they may have been better off to go back into their original positions. But I would say Caelan Lyons, with the fitness levels he has, he was obviously expected to go with Hegarty, because Hegarty goes all over. Kevin Moran, you know, struggled, I thought, on Tom Morrissey.
But that's
a brilliant players, but
that's a dilemma.
By Limerick, like, you know?
Yeah, but that's a dilemma, Mark, and maybe Brian. Like, Caelan Lyons has been so good attacking. And I kind of featured him in my highlights beforehand. But coming up the field, and, you know, he got the goal against Cork, and he attacked Kilkenny at every opportunity. But if you give him a man-marking job, then does that nullify the guy's natural instinct to play? Whereas I'd say Kevin Moran probably comfortable enough doing that job at this hour of his life, Huggy.
Yeah.
But Caelan Lyons, do you take away his natural flair if he's so obsessed with following some lad?
Yeah, I think Caelan's been very impressive this year, you know, and it's predominantly been down to his attacking strength, you know, bombing up from the wing back position. He got a goal in earlier in the championship, but he struggled in the first half against Kilkenny in the semi-final, you know, when he was having to defend, you know, when he was having to go back. I don't, you know, there's a slight question mark about Caelan in terms of, you know, definitely his first instinct is to drive forward, put balls over the bar, you know. You see him in the second half when the game was running away from Watford, having a shot there from about 40 yards out, and, you know, he scored a great point. But, you know, he's a wing back. You know, your first job as a wing back is to defend, simple as. And then anything beyond that, you can be damn sure whoever was going in, and Kyle Hayes, like the last day in the semi-final, Kyle Hayes was picking up Joe Canning. You know, absolutely, we're all talking about, you know, going forward the ball. But Kyle Hayes, you know, has done a lot of hurling at centre back. He's a great defender. you know, and same on the other side with Jeremy Burns, you know, what they've added to their game is going forward. You know, Jeremy Burns down the years, maybe you'd accuse him of going for long range points too often, you know, whereas he's curtailed that now. He's used the ball is much better, but he's a natural wing back defender. And both are very athletic. I just think with Caleb Nines, yeah, he was having to defend, having to pick up a player the quality of Hegarty, you know. He lost him at certain occasions, you know, and Hegarty was popping up into space and putting balls over the bar. And I think, you know, look, it's a learning curve for Caleb Lyons. You know, it's this level, you know, he's new on the stage and he's huge potential. But I think definitely Kevin is more suited, you know, if he had to do a job, a man marking job, he's done it over the years in certain individuals, you know, and, you know, he would have picked up Fenno against Kilkenny at times. And that would have been a titanic, you know, battle. But yeah, I think, you know, just for me looking at it, Watford never asked any questions to Limerick. You know, there was never a situation where Limerick had were uncomfortable. You know, whether that was, you know, Gleeson had a good game, you know, 5 points, but, you know, Bennett had a good game. But there was never a situation where you could say, or even, you know, for example, if Cameron Lyons was driving up, you know, and we get onto ball, there was never a situation where Limerick were like, right, we need to make a change or do something there. They were always comfortable, you know, they were just clicking through the gears and Watford were trying to react, you know, I felt. And, you know, Caleb has had a good year for Watford, but he was definitely under severe pressure for most of that match, I thought.
And Dale, if you played a lot of hurling at wing back, let's say, what would you do if you were detailed to Mark Grohl Hegarty next week? If you were
give him a smell. Just no point. I wouldn't hit the ball, but he wouldn't hit the ball. But TJ, to tell you the truth, I wouldn't like to be on him now. The specimen and the specimens they are now, even. He makes Tom Morrissey look like a small man, and you know Tom Morrissey's not a small man.
He's a black.
And in actual fact, watching it again last night, and TJ Cahir had the whole match on. I only freaked on it now. I was just flicking through channels when I came back here trying to finalise the piece for this morning, and did the whole match on, did full 70 whatever minutes. And I thought Tom Morrissey was man of the match again. And you couldn't argue at the time, like, hey, go 7 from play and I earn a final, but Tom Morrissey led. He set up 3 of the points for Hegarty, like, oh, dirty ball. He was unreal. Yeah. I mean, even we were talking about goalkeeping, and you know that thing I was saying about Don Logue, like, you could actually no problem hit the ball down on Tom Morrissey, man, oh, you don't have to go short for Nicky.
No,
there
was one on 29 minutes still. It was a long puck out from Nicky, and basically there was a couple of lads under the ball, and Tom Morrissey, the ball spilt actually, and he was just still in the power to kind of keep himself upright, and he caught it in the second attempt, swung onto his left. It was a fantastic score in 29 minutes. So, like, I would agree with you. He had an unbelievable game. Would have been man of the match in, I don't know how many All-Irelands.
And you take away then, like, possibly the best of the 3 of them under a high ball would be Kyle at centre-forward. Maybe no, that's arguable, right? But he's very good anyway. Like, and you put him wing back, and you still have, like, that. That was always what I said about the Kilkenny half forwards in their heyday, the 4-in-a-row team, let's say, Hoagie's team. You, like, there was no problem with the Kilkenny goalie, whoever he was at the time, going long, be it Herro, be it James McGarry, be it Murph, could go along, and there was no problem because there was ball winners under the ball, as you can't buy them. You're on about playing through the lines and this, that, and the other. And Limerick are very good at playing through the lines. We know that. Like, the cornerbacks are as comfortable as corner forwards, feeding ball out with short stick passes.
But that's what I'm saying, though, the visionary, like, and I assume, like, Paul Kinnock would have had a major role in that, is to see Keane Lynch going to centre forward, being just so comfortable on the ball, and the lads looking for him every time and being a brilliant outlet, and he popping into space, causing a problem for any centre back that sits. And then Kyle Hayes given that freedom. Like, that, like, that's the piece of the jigsaw that we probably thought early on, is this the right move? We knew Kyle could play anywhere. That wasn't an issue. Yeah. Was it going to take in the half hour then? But that's taken to another level. So whether a team plays a sweeper or not, like, popping balls into Keane there 30, 40 yards in front of, like, so he's going to zip them into any corner forward who makes any bit of a run. They're making breaking runs. Extremely difficult to mark. But I'm just saying about the game plan is just perfected. It's exceptionally well taught. They all know what they're at. And as I said, that's the visionary, I think, that has come out of Kinnock. Like, someone like myself, I couldn't ever come up with the visionary game plans. I'm kind of more a member of CASE, Dello, right? CAASE, copy and steal everything. That's me. You know what I mean?
You're some case, all right.
In some case, yeah. So I'm just saying, it is a joy to watch. And for Limerick people and Limerick supporters, and let's say all former Limerick hurlers, it's brilliant that we can talk about the system is ours and all the players rather than we spent too many years looking over the hedge, whether it be Tipperary or Cork or whatever, or Clare even, right? Thanks. Saying, do you know what I mean? We'd love to have those players, and that we have them now is just the real beauty of living in this particular moment. And
and like you're right about the system and the style of playing and that, but a lot of it still comes down to the quality of the player. And ye have really good quality players. I was involved with the development squads back in 10-11 when I saw Cian Lynch for the first time with the lovely ponytail and the pigtail that he had. When you saw that, like, and hit at 14, 15 years of age. Tom Morrissey was on that panel. Barry Nash was on it. Sean Finn was on it. Glenn was on the B squad at the development squad. There's five or six fellas there now. I saw them firsthand. Joe Quaid started out with them. Brian Ryan took them on after that. They were an exceptional bunch of players. And it's great credit down to Limerick that they identified those lads early and they minded them like they minded Mice at a Crossroads because they are the players. And I suppose the previous experience TG had with winning 3 under 21 All-Irelands and you got very, very little off of that afterwards, right? This panel of players are totally dedicated and different. But that was down to, you know, two things. Quality of player, number one, plus the men around them then to in their formative years to keep them together and bring them on to the next level. I mean, hats off to the people behind the scenes in Limerick as well. Like just,
yeah, you can't take that away. And also the physicality, and like the size of Dermot Burns and Will O'Donoghue and Kyle Hayes and Gerard Hegarty. It's like if they were talking out from Munster last night, like they wouldn't have been out of place. Like they're just huge. Yeah.
But, no mention of rugby, please.
Okay, I will throw in, and as I said, and Dale has touched it already, that Kinnock factor, Mark, is massive. Like the complete buy-in of knowing exactly, and like they can get around. What it doesn't matter what the opposition do, and it's all about making their plan better. They don't care whether you play one sweep or two sweepers. If they have a free man or two at the back, it doesn't make a difference.
And we discussed this at the start of the year with Tony Kelly. They left Tony Kelly doing
it. It doesn't matter.
We're going to play our game, and you can play away. We don't mind.
Yeah, they're in a stage in their life cycle now, TJ, where the opposition is irrelevant. Like they've bought in so much now to what Paul Kinnerick was saying. You know, when they came in originally, they would have been telling these guys, this is what we want to do. This is, you know, and you know, the difficulty there, and you know your training club sites, is to get that buy-in, to get them to believe in it. All of a sudden, then you get a bit of success. You win a national league or you win a provincial title. And the players then start saying, this is actually working. This is it, like. You have an All-Ireland now. Now you're back to... Like, these lads now are reading the papers about how physically dominant they are, how good... You know, they're taking pride in that, you know, and they're looking to raise the bar. So regardless of who they come up against next year or whatever, it doesn't really matter. You know, they're in a space now where they're competing against themselves. You know, they're competing against, you know, Mike Casey and Richie English coming back next year and whoever else is on the bench, you know, or one of the under-20s coming up. You know, they're looking to... And they're being challenged, I've no doubt, by Kinnerick and these guys, you know, to say, right, lads, that was last year. Where can we bring it to next? You know, so...
And Hoagie, well, the competition's coming from within. You obviously... You were the greatest in our living memory, in fairness to you, and what a team. But, like, did that start the thing? Like, we were probably on a Sunday game or we were writing a piece in the newspaper or we were doing co-commentary, whatever we were doing, or maybe even only meeting lads in the pub and we were talking about what could Kenny do. And, like, I'd liken your role an awful lot like to Declan Hennan's. Like, you always seem to be able to find that pocket of space in front of the full back line and be the anchor there. Like, is all that sort of narrative around it, does that feed into your own mind, like, that... Yeah, I'm good at this. Yeah, this is the way we play. Yeah, I have two good wing backs outside me that bomb on. No, they mightn't have bombed on your two wing backs, but they were good ones.
I think so. I think it just strengthens that unity. You know, I think as long as you can keep the ships going, you know, which was Brian's job in terms of keeping the focus, I think it does. It creates that kind of look, Becca, you're hard to win All-Ireland. So when you get a taste of it, you want to keep it going, you know, and you do whatever you can. And that competition comes from within the camp, you know, and it can be silly things like you're going into the gym and all of a sudden you've seen two of the boys coming out and you're wondering, geez, how long were they in for? You know, or if I'm looking across, I'm seeing, you know, John Tennyson out in the pitch early before me, you know, I'm going, Jesus, I'm going to be here earlier next, you know, so, and in a good way, you know, in a good way, like you're all challenging each other, you know, you're looking at what times the lads are doing in the runs, you know, coming back after the winter, you know, that kind of way. And you're talking about, geez, your man is in some nick, you know, and this all feeds into it because you're a top, you know, you're Limerick are the top dogs now and they want to stay there. And you know you have a management team there who are going to do whatever it takes to stay there, and you don't want to be the one to lose out. You don't want to be the one that ends up sitting in the stands the next year, you know, or worse. So, you know, it's self-fulfilling, you know, and the guys know they have the golden ticket now, and it's about keeping that thing moving forward and keep evolving, I suppose, you know. And it's a frightening thought to see, you know, I suppose, where these guys can go.
Yeah, I played on a team that was similar to this, what this team has achieved now, was 2 and 3 years. Mm. And it didn't affect Liam Doyle being last in every long run. Like, you know, his methodology in his head was that, well, if I'm very petty whack last in January, if I've improved a nice bit by March, that Mike Mack would be happy enough for him, like, you know.
when I came in, that was there as well, Dale. He says, you want to show that margin of improvement come this ring time. So the worse you can come in January, the bigger the margin of improvement you're going to have by April. You're going, geez, look at his way.
When the bleep test comes in, you have to say to Dialer, you don't stop at the first bleep, Dialer.
that disappeared fairly quickly with Mick Dempsey, I can tell you. No, Richard.
But I mean, I suppose, look, the thing with him is every time he went out in the championship, he did it.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Like, but yeah, no. Like TJ, I have to say this to you, like 10 years ago, this winter you were on strike.
Yeah.
Strike.
I know.
Cock crow did strike. Like
it's hard to fathom. Like, look, I think that maybe, like, I played in the 90s and into the 90s and stuff, I think we would have been maybe a little bit behind the curve on things like fitness, strength and conditioning, nutrition for a while. I think that was part of the problem.
You were dirty, though.
Yeah, we would have been. We probably had no choice for a while. I think that some of the players would have known that maybe other counties were ahead of them in terms of what was going on around the place, whether it was through college or whatever, the coaching, everything. And just, I don't know, I don't want to go back to 2010 right now, but obviously it ended in strike. Donal Brady came in 2011, and basically that seemed to be the eureka moment that said, hey, we have to change things here. We would have had a poor underage record aside from the under-21 titles. Like, minors are a very important group in terms of building a kind of a group of players and trying to get them ready for the future. It's even more important now, and I think that you have to be able to make a plan know whether you be in a club or in a county setup, right, to say that we're planning for the long term here. We have to get as many players as we can to the required standard. We need big physical players. We need to kind of broaden the group, get as many of them through. And they're doing that exceptionally well. But a lot of expertise there now as well in terms of, as a coaching, strength and conditioning, nutrition. You see the Limerick backroom team, I'm sure you probably saw it on social media with 21 people on it, stats. So at the cutting edge now, I would say Limerick are. I'm not sure, like, Dale, you probably would be better than me now to say, like, in terms of stats, conditioning and coaching, like Kinnerk, we say what Joe O'Connor and Mikey Kiley have done and Shane O'Donnell, are there better out there right now to roll off the lips? And I would say that's probably one of the challenges for other counties.
Yeah, like everyone has to be looking at. They have to look at, like, it's only 10 years. Limerick were in turmoil. Like, I remember being in charge of Dublin and we hadn't hardly won a match in the league, and this Limerick arrived in Parnell Park with this league team, and I remember saying to Liam Rush, I'm putting you up full forward. He'd been midfield. Like, if you don't get 4 goals against this crowd, it's just like, it was virtually a fourth string TJ, I suppose, that'd be fair to say. And I think Rushy got 4 goals the same day and kept us in Division 1 anyway. But
I would say there's probably a lot of clubs even out there today, maybe, that have a lot of talent and a lot of players. And like, it takes, like, I know that, like, obviously you mentioned John Costello's getting the credit for it in Dublin, like, but it does take something out of the ordinary, like, whether it's a business, whether it is in sports, that somebody's got to come up with a platform where everybody buys into, gets everybody on board. And I think you said this morning there, even, it wasn't all the county board. The county board played their part, right? But I think the influence from outside here of, like, obviously Jerry and JP and obviously Joe Mack was involved as well. Like, hugely involved, you know what I mean? And,
like, well, the biggest part, TJ, I would have seen now, and I was involved for 3 years, the biggest part I would have seen was the county board stepped aside in lots of ways and let the boys get on with it, you know, and let Joe appoint who he wanted to appoint. And, you know, I think there's a lot of that in it as well. Like, I mean, doesn't too many county boards step aside.
Well, I suppose you have to believe that the guy you're stepping aside to does have the right, I suppose, he has the right ambition, the right vision. And like, because if somebody does that, if you give way to somebody and he kind of leads it down a long road, a wrong road, you could be in trouble. But yeah, they seem to know what they were doing. It changed and the momentum has been gathering. Like seven minor Munster finals in 8 years wouldn't have been matched historically by Limerick. So like that's really a massive turning point. And even, I'm not sure, Mark, I wouldn't have known about either minor team a whole lot, to be honest about it. But it did come as a surprise to me that Limerick pushed aside Cork that easy.
Absolutely. And I mean, that minor team had beaten Clare in a good game in the first round of the championship, and they were
the 16 and 15 winners, Mark, as well in the tournament, weren't they?
They were hotly tipped now to go on, TJ. But what was disappointing from a Cork perspective is that the lads kind of gave up more in the second half. Like I know they were caught by two soccer goals straight before half, trying to get two goals within a minute, and Cork had led by 2 points, but that there was no fight in the second half and got beaten by 12 points afterwards was very disappointing. And I know that Don Logan, the selectors, would have put an awful lot of work into that current panel of players. They found it difficult, like every other county, to, you know, keep up their fitness levels and all that. But from what I was hearing, the lads were still churning away with the colleges and the schools, and their fitness levels were good, but they were blown away. And that's credit to Limerick, and Cork were favourites going into the match. Right?
Yeah, I'd say, and that comes from the positivity. I'm not sure if you've kind of felt it and say over the board, like the positivity since 2018 and since this mountain has been climbed, right? Like there is, everyone's kind of complimenting each other, complimenting the ship as to how smoothly it's been run. There's no one questioning anything. Whereas beforehand, and even in my term there as manager, Jesus, there was people ripping the back off people, not just myself now, like it was at every corner.
That Limerick leader was beautiful for that stuff.
Limerick leader was just, it was unreal. And like it was like as if there was a bitterness and a kind of a jealousy that nobody wanted anybody else to succeed. But that corner has been turned now. And like, yeah. I suppose the beauty of that then is that every team now has got a chance. It's a bit like, say, when people are on top of the farm, where it's a jockey riding horses, all of a sudden he feels he can win on every horse.
I take that to the Kilkenny thing then. I'd say, like, it's a bit like going to school in Flannans. Like, if you got on the hearty team in Flannans, you felt you might win. Back in my time now, I suppose, with all the borders, you might win a Hearty Cup. But I'd say, Hoagie, a bit like that with yourself, the hardest part may be getting on the Kilkenny team. If you were on the Kilkenny team, you felt fair old chance I'll win something.
Trying to get in there, trying to get, you know, like the only thing with Brian there is he'd be at every club match from under 14 or schools up, you know, so he knew everyone intimately anyway. But yeah, absolutely. The competition from club level right through, you know, trying to get through. And, you know, you're always talking about superstars or whatever else, and these guys don't tend to materialize then when you get to the top level. But I mean, like, just on TJ's point, I mean, you know, you have to give them huge credit. You know, like, they're basking in the glory of the All-Ireland now, but that 10-year, you know, plan, or that plan back 10 years ago, like, I suppose the first part is you had to acknowledge there was a problem, you know, and a lot of county boards or a lot of counties kind of are going through the motions and just happy with the status quo, you know. So to acknowledge, right, there is an issue here. And I suppose putting in place a vision, or, you know, where do we want to get to? And then certain individuals, I'm sure, would have had to give up or power or step, you know, right or left, and accept that maybe someone else has a different opinion. And, you know, lots of people don't like doing that, you know, and bringing in people with, you know, the skill set to move things forward. And I think, Dale, you were involved with Limerick at one point. I remember chatting to you, and, you know, bringing people from outside and, you know, going up to other counties and seeing what to do. I saw firsthand with the Dublin situation. You know, I was in Kearns at the time, I think, when they joined schools and produced the Dublin colleges, which is the springboard for the likes of Conal Keeney and Joey Bowen and all these boys to move forward, and then they separate. So, you know, there's a huge, you know, they take great credit for what they've done, and they're reaping the benefits of that now. But you say still you're going backwards, you know, and there's a fear of, potentially, you know, we in Kilkenny, we've had a great system, you know, and we were lucky with a county board that was very supportive, you know. And the question now is, you know, do we need to look at our, you know, setup and see, you know, is it still fit for purpose, you know? But yeah, I mean, coming back to your question, yeah, absolutely. Getting into the Kilkenny, for me personally, I can only speak for myself, I suppose, you know, it was stages, it was building blocks, it was getting onto a Kieran's team, which, you know, again, was a was a big thing. And then moving, you know, getting into the Kilkenny setup, you know, I was on an under-21 Kilkenny team for 2 years and we won nothing. We didn't get out with Leinster, you know, and it was back to, you know, there was an All-Ireland winning team the year before me, an All-Ireland team the year after me, you know, so you're kind of thinking, geez, you're forgotten about. But getting into that the senior setup, and then I suppose you're sitting beside guys, and I was looking at Kilkenny, you're looking across the dressing room at likes of DJ Carey and these guys, you know, and you're just absorbing what these guys do, you know, like the way DJ used to look after himself, you know, physically and the preparation, and you know, he'd be there the first in training, like, and what he used to do, you know, and the likes of these guys around him. And then I suppose that filters through to the guys then as you move through the ranks and DJ steps aside and retires, you know, so it's kind of handing the baton on. But yeah, trying to get in there first, and then you're learning. So same with Limerick, I'm sure, now at the moment, you know. Yeah,
and I said, Mark, that was in Cork too. Like, I certainly thought it was in Cork there through the 90s.
No, it was never there.
Was it? Did you have it?
I suppose we got a huge return out of the 95 minor team and the 97, 98 under 21 team. That was the backbone for the senior successes, I suppose. You know, a lot of the lads were very young in 99. The average age of the team was 22. We probably would have expected to go on, but there was a couple of issues and stuff that started to boil in 2000-2001, which ended up being the strikes, and it was very damaging. There was a lot of hurt. There was a lot of good men were hurt, actually. A lot of great former players involved in those stuff, and you know, no, it had to be done. And that issue, the first strike we had, was purely and solely done with the county board. Nobody else, but people got hurt in the crossfire of that, and that hurt is probably still there, I suppose. I would say TGN hasn't gone away, even though some, you know, players and administrators have gone away, but they left an awful lot of damage within clubs as well, because clubs took sides as well, and people within clubs took sides, which, you know, and I think what you just said there, and what you've described in Limerick, is exactly what needs to happen in Cork now. That's the backbiting that was going on, okay, delighted the fellas were bait, and that this fellow was bait, and that fellow was bait. But then success comes along and all of a sudden the wheel turns and then fellas are patting fellas in the back rather than giving them a kick in the bum. So I think we are still, even though we went on in 2000, we got to 4 All-Irelands in a row, as I mentioned, winning 2 of them. But the minute we were beaten in the 4th one, things changed dramatically backwards again. And that's the thing that, I suppose, it's there now. And the question is, who are the people to lead us out of it? And The one number that I'm looking at is the playing population that we do have. We have the second biggest population of playing players in the country outside of Dublin. And that gives me hope that, you know, numbers with numbers, you can produce something. But it's trying to knit the whole thing together, TJ. And if I can make one comment this year now, is that we had a fantastic club championship. And I said during the year, it'll take a decade before this will seep into the players. What I can't understand now is that our underage in Rebel Og haven't adopted the exact same championship format. They haven't. That's the first thing. The second thing is they resisted up to last week changing the age groups of the underage from 12, 14, 16, 18. Every other county has gone 13, 15 and 17. And Croke Park had to put manners on Rebel Og to change. And that is the single biggest thing. Like, you see there a small little thing like that now that our Rebel Og fellas think that they're above what's going on at national level. And that is a problem in Cork. Like,
maybe they're right on that one, but we'll leave that for another day.
But Brian, change. Everybody is slow to change, yeah. Right? There's no point in saying otherwise. But the fact that, you know, I don't think, like, when you're at 17, it makes fixtures for adults way better because they can't play and stuff like that. So I think, look, we all came up through the under 12, 14, 16, but there are so many players now, there is a competition for 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. That's, and I can see it in my own club in Killa, has a manager for every grade from 5 to 17. Like, that would be unheard of 20 years ago. You had your 12, 14, 16, and 18. But, like, we need to change. But the biggest two things, we never adopted the new championship format, which went down a bomb in Cork at underage level, and we had to be told by Croke Park to change our age group. That's not good.
Mark, we brought in Delo there in Limerick for the underage setup, and he was a key part of the what's going on now. Maybe you could take down Delo for a couple of years.
Well, I think before Delo arrived, there was a man by the name of Jerry Wallace was in Limerick from Cork.
Middleton man. Yeah.
And he has had success with Donal O'Grady. But look, I think, look, Cork, I don't know whether they'll take influence from the outside, to be honest with it, you know. I think
not even Anthony Daly.
Christy O'Connor is down there at the moment, isn't he?
He is. How's he getting that, I wonder?
I think he's enjoying his job, but he's a lot of work to do, he feels. He looking at Limerick yesterday, I'd say, and he's saying,
"Holy Jesus!"
And the funny thing is, we were down to the Gaelic grounds last year and we beat Limerick.
Yeah, and a team that Limerick have had trouble with. I think it's Cork, even the likes of Joe McKenna doesn't like playing Cork in the challenge match.
Yeah. Like, the funny thing is, we just need a consistency, you know, to come through all of the time. And you know, does it mean enough to the lads to sacrifice their lives? And I think that those Limerick players are sacrificing everything. And they can see the bigger prize. They know they're the best team in the country right now. They know there's Munster titles and All-Ireland titles to be won. And I think they've put everything else on hold. That is their single most important thing. And I'm just wondering, is that the single most important thing in Cork players? It might be for some, but maybe not for all.
I'm kind of hoping, Mark, that a few of the Limerick lads now will do a Jack McCaffrey on it and say there's more to life, like, you know, and tip off the earth for themselves.
No, I don't know. A solid investment over the next 7 months, not guaranteed, could be the 6-4 available on Limerick to retain the All-Ireland final. Tax-free return, Della.
Yeah, they all thought we were that way 22, 23 years ago as well, 98. But Jimmy Cooney got the time wrong. Oh, Jimmy! Shout out to Jimmy there. Nice man, nice man. Nice people up there in Sarsfields, TJ, aren't they?
Oops, absolutely, Dillo. And I heard little rumours on my street that as a high-profile manager heading that way. I'm not sure whether those rumours... You heard them, Les?
I will...
No, TJ, question, go on, tell us.
The biggest question now, Brian, for the next 12 months is, will he be running the pub? Or will he be training an outside club?
I'm going behind a brood mare like you. I think it's the easiest way to make money, like.
Brian, there is talk on my street that Mr. Dello is going heading to a Galway club. Sarsfield is the one he just mentioned for 2021 season.
Very good.
So, yeah. Well talked about now on my street.
Big news.
Bogey, you know yourself with these rumours like and all that. You know, you can't really. What of Hoagie, I'll throw it back at you because he's distracting you there. That Gary Spillane, Rogue, who's after winning 3 in a row in Galway as well. Like, what of Waterford, Hoagie? Was it a step too far? Would we have had a better final if your boys were in it, if Tip were in it, if Galway were in it?
I'm always believe that the best teams, you know, get to the final, the best teams always win. I don't think...
That's a Cody line, though. Come on.
Well, look, I mean, from a Kilkenny perspective, I think it's been one step forward, two step back this year to a certain extent. I mean, we saw the Dublin match and we were kind of saying, we weren't really sure what was the cause of the second half kind of, you know, I won't say demise, but, you know, the fact that, you know, way Dublin came onto us so strongly and we were kind of making excuses or, you know, really, it was two moments of brilliance in the Leinster final against Galway, you know, that got us over the line. And, you know, it was an eye-opener, really, in the second half, the way Waterford completely dismantles us. It's not something I've seen in in terms of my playing time, but, you know, even watching Kilkenny, you know, it was, you know, 2-16 in the second half to concede is a fairly frightening scoreline. But, you know, he's just boasting to get in there.
Well, I was just going to say, Brian, it's unusually, like, for Kilkenny to be dominated in the air. That was kind of probably the most significant aspect of that game.
Yeah, there was a number of different elements to it that, you know, would worry me. But you know, so look, Waterford were there on merit. No one gave him a chance. I remember being on the show and we were, I think it was only, Derek was the only one kind of giving Waterford any kind of chance of winning the match in Munster. And they got to the final and that's credit to them. But look.
Lads, Hoagie, were giving them the nod last Thursday.
I wouldn't mind last Thursday. I'm talking about the beginning of the year. Jesus, it's a two-horse race at that stage. He was probably only getting odds on him. That's why he was giving the nod. But look, Limerick were out. I couldn't see Waterford beating Limerick, to be honest about it, unless what Limerick had a really off day, you know, unless they dropped their standards. And they weren't going to do that. For the future, look, I suppose I do have to mention one player who my heart really went out to. It was Ty De Burka. You know, Ty De Burka is a player I've loved watching over the last couple of years. I just think he's a fantastic player. You know, and he's an integral part of that Waterford team. He's a real leader. And I suppose I haven't heard it officially, but, you know, the worry is it a cruciate? You know, the way he went down, I've seen that with a couple of players before. And look, the cameras went on to come off the pitch. And You know, you just knew by him he was, you know, he was distraught. Yeah. It was horrific, you know, scoffing an iron final like that. You know, your heart goes out to him. But look,
what was the confusing thing there, Hoagie, was the way he jogged off. And funny enough, I was beside Henry.
Yeah.
Who obviously had, and Henry said he's cool, see, it's gone, Dalo.
Yeah.
I said, why is he jogging off? Because he knows he can't go left or right.
Yeah.
You can jog away with it, but you can't turn.
Can't go. Yeah. And exactly. I've seen, I think Henry did the same the second, you know, that's it. It's it's the initial pain, it's excruciating, I think, for the first 5 minutes. And then after that, it subsides and you're able to walk off, which is the frightening thing, but you can't pivot left or right. So you're effectively, you're gone. And that's the sad thing, is for such a serious injury to be able to walk off the field. And, but yeah, look, my heart went out to him. But look, in terms of the Waterford, they hadn't got enough, you know, be it physically. And I think Liam Cahill referenced that after the match in terms of what they need to do for next year, you know, in terms of building the players and that. And I don't know, you know, is there, they need to find another two or three players to really kind of add that strength to depth. I don't know, are they coming through, you know,
they possibly have one in Shane Bennett.
If he comes back. But, you know, with Tyga Burke has gone now.
Paddy Manning,
Paddy Manning will be back. I don't know.
Parrig has a lot of miles on the clock. He's had a lot of injuries. Yeah, for sure he'd come back and add something. But what I'm talking about is that dynamism. That you know, you need those two or three younger guys coming through that are really going to kind of lift all the boats. Like, you've got Kevin Moore in there. He's another year older, you know, and not to be retiring lads. You know, he certainly had value there. But you need those two or three younger guys coming through. Like, Bennett this year really kind of stepped up to the plate, you know, and took it on. But you need two or three more of those guys. If you're going to compete with Limerick, which at the end of the day, that's where the bar is. You know, it's grand talking about.
You'll have to say, Hoagie, that Ozzy stepped up to the plate yesterday, in fairness.
He did. And, you know, Ozzy's got a lot of criticism, you know, over the last couple of years, probably from winning Waterford, and purely because of the talent that he is. You know, we measure Ozzy at a different level to everyone else, you know, because of what he can do. And probably unfairly so, you know, because I suppose he set the bar so high, a bit like Tony Kelly when he came on the scene in his first year or two, you know, and what he did. And, you know, every player has a dip, particularly that second season syndrome, you know, they drop off a bit. But look, he had a good year for Waterford this year, you know, and he was building as the year went on. I think Liam Cahill was looking for him to develop other sides of his game. He got 5 points, I think, in the final, you know, which is a great return on, you know, particularly on a losing side, and a side that was under so much pressure against the likes of Limerick. But, you know, it's... I still think there's more from Ozzy. You know, that's how good he is, you know. And I hope he'll use this as a springboard to bring his game on to another level. But
I thought the start of the second half, Dalo, was where the game finally started to drift away from Waterford. And I thought Gleeson actually at full forward, particularly when they hit the ball. They hit 3 balls in, one after the other, in high. And they came back out and they were returned. And they got three, and Limerick got 3 scores down in the far side. And I thought that knocked the stuffing out of Waterford, to be honest. Even if they were poked into the corner to give Desi Hutchinson a small chance. But the fact that they went in high, and I was just saying, Jesus, where's Gleeson? Like, and he was centre forward, I think, at that stage. If they were going to be poking it in high, Gleeson needed to be the edge of the square.
They needed a
the funny thing is that Jack Fagan was so brilliant under the high ball against Kilkenny in the semi-final. The first ball that came down between him and Dermot Burns, like, Burns stuck up the claw, like, and Jack Fagan was... About 2 feet below.
I was going to ask you there, Stephen O'Keefe, with his first number of puck outs, he went down top of Kyle Hayes with the first couple, and then he swung him over top of Dermot Burns. Like, was that basically trying to hammer the hammer effectively, or were they trying to back themselves?
I don't know. I think he looked at the last quarter, the Munster final, TJ, and we're only surmising here now what we think, like, but he looked at the last quarter where he could get no change whatsoever in the Munster final in the last quarter with long puck outs. And you remember he tried the short one to Jack Prendergast, and Limerick bit by bit forced Jack out over his own end line to give away a 65. Like, God, with this Limerick team, it's hard to know where to go. Like, Jack Fagan is very good under a high ball, but you're facing Dermot Burns or Kyle Hayes. Like, you're not going to get better. Like,
well, they showed their hand against Kilkenny, you know, in the second half, in terms, you know, like, Jack Fagan was always going to be a marked man. You know, if they thought the same thing was going to work again against Limerick, you know, Limerick were sitting there at home with the feet up watching this going, right, well, one thing's for sure, Jack Fagan is not going to be catching 5-6 balls in a row, you know. They would have targeted, made sure that, you know, so it's...
So, Dylan, what do other counties do in the close season? Are they trying to match Limerick, and are they trying to come up with their own visionary system to say, how do we get around this?
Well, continuously, TJ, I'd say, like, we've looked at, you know, let's say the Kilkenny team of Hoagie's era, and you know, the four in a row, and then the couple afterwards, people looked at them and how would you break them? Then they looked at Clare in 13, and a lot of people would have thought Clare were going to kick on with a new style and a running game and that kind of thing. And it's just, I think it evolves the whole time. The gas thing is, like, Limerick only got goals in one game in the whole year. And Ursula Jacob highlighted last night that Waterford possibly had 8 goal chances. Now, do you need to take 3 of those to beat Limerick? I certainly think you do. You won't outpint this Limerick team, I'd say, anyway. That's for sure.
Yeah. The first goal chance, they did everything right that Jack Fagan had. And he was unlucky. He went for it. And in fairness, even there before half-time, was highlighted last night, Bennett, again, he could have brought it back to 2 easy, but he sensed there was a goal on, and there probably was a goal on. And if he popped the pass, I'd say it would have been possibly an even better chance. But yeah, that's one of the positives. Your man, Ira Daly, who came in as well, very young.
Very good, yeah.
So, like, there are positives there for Waterford. And, you know, Cal said last night they need to improve their physicality. Like, if they can continue upwards and, I suppose, maybe take the lessons from yesterday, you'd say that they're probably in a better position than some of the other counties heading into 2021.
I think so. And they did create goal chances. There's no doubt about that. The block from Dermot Burns on Stephen Bennett was a brilliant block. Like, that was, to me, nearly the best chance of a goal.
It turned out that Bennett actually had 3 goal chances in the course of the game. And I thought the 2 that he struck from the 21, struck 14. On both occasions, he didn't get a real clean strike on either of them. I think Jack Prendergast might have came in front of him for the second one. But the one that Burns got, I mean, if the ball fell to anybody, you wanted it to fall to Stephen Bennett. And Burns got in a great block. Like, but Stephen did get the 3 opportunities and got nothing from him.
No, the one thing, Nicky Quaid hasn't had much to do all year, like a lot of Kilkenny goalies in the past. I'd say he was delighted to get a bit of action yesterday. Jeez, he's a great keeper, isn't he, lads? Touch and his sureness of hand. And you'd love him behind you, wouldn't you, in that kind of way?
Well, imagine
you're on the full back line, you're saying, who's behind me? Like, you'd love the thought of Nicky Quaid behind you.
He made 2 saves. Yeah, sorry, go on, Brian.
Sorry, no, the lads are talking him up for an all-star anyway. The Limerick boys, I think they were feeling sorry for him because he's had such a quiet time there. Shane mentioned him, and I think there was one or two of the other lads in the interview. So, but look, he's class. They played against him, you know.
But Brian, the puck out's a key part of
They are. Yeah, massive restarts. Like, and I think the retention was 80% of puck outs, I think. I mean, Christ almighty, that's some platform to start off with, you know, if you've got that. And, you know, but, you know, DJ, the puck out, you need, it's multifactorial. You need a goalie who can execute the puck out and be composed enough and confident enough to back himself. And then you need the guys out the field to be able to create the space or get into positions to receive that ball. But yeah, look, he's a fantastic, he does the basics well. And then on top of that, he's a fantastic, you know, he's a great shot stopper and all that, which is the basics. But on top of that, then he's a fantastic at distributing the ball. And he's definitely deserving. If he does get it, he should probably deserve it.
And all with 2 new lads in the full back line, Dan Morrissey and Barry Nash this year. Like, Barry Nash has really grown, and so is Dan. Now, the 2 of them were excellent again yesterday. But Barry Nash has gone up, I think, in my opinion, because he struggled initially in the early games. He made a couple of mistakes and he gave away a lot of frees. But I thought his solid and semi-final and final performance were very, very good. Very, very good.
Yeah, we've touched on most lines. And on that line, I suppose, they're also blessed with probably the finest cornerback that has played the game in a long, long time, lads, in John Finn. What a player. Like, he's the ultimate cornerback, isn't he? He's good on the ball. He's good to read the ball. He's good recovery. He's good tackling. He's top-notch number 2, isn't he?
But he's a very nice gentleman as well. Like, he was interviewed before the game. I mean, his interview before the game was just outstanding and just so level-headed and easy to listen to and then be able to go out and perform at a top level. Class.
He's the modern cornerback. Like, he's comfortable on the ball, but he's, you know, mobile, he's quick, you know, he doesn't mind mixing it, you know, he can do it all.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that, Huggy. He'd be saucy as well if you wanted him to be. He played whatever you like.
Yeah.
Les, we did a big curtain raiser, obviously, yesterday. It wasn't a great game, I have to say. It was a lot of tension in it, and I suppose it's a bit like maybe the championship playoff in the Premier League. We spoke about that last week. A lot at stake to get up into the Lee McCarthy, but you know, great win for Antrim. Hoagie, you have to go, have you?
Yeah, sorry, Dello. I'm Hoagie, under pressure
you need
here.
To get a boss like TJ Ryan.
TJ, he's lying there as casual as you like with the Limerick ribbon around him. And I'd say he's even out of the house.
No, I'm at work. But
That's a Zoom background if ever I saw. That's a Zoom background if ever I saw one.
He's the boss. You're no more at work.
I am the boss. But
Hoagie, the initials on your Genzy there, TJ. Yeah, where did you get them? Now, how old are they?
That's back to about 13 or 14 or 15 or whatever.
And they still fit you.
Yeah, Dubai. Yeah, I'm nearly fitter now, Mark, than when I was playing.
You're definitely fitter now when you're playing. I can vouch for that.
You'll be chasing the cows at Donny in the morning, I'd say.
Oh, geez, no, Mark, them days are well gone. But Hoagie, I was going to say, if you had a meeting in Limerick in the afternoon, give us an old text. We look after you.
I will.
I have a table with one with my four experts. So I have one spare seat at the moment. If any of the listeners tune in there too and they're kind of stuck around Limerick or whatever, sure, get on to Larry there and we won't see you stuck.
We'll give out your number over the phone, but okay. Larry has
TJ, we'll take a rain check on that one. We'll have to start something out.
Dalo's going to organise a Christmas party for us all, so we'll wait for that one.
Can't wait.
In March. Yeah. But Hoagie, just before you go, you didn't finish bottom of the Fantasy League anyway. Fair play. Get up there, Hoagie, boy.
You had a good day yesterday, in fairness.
I was a bit naive, Dalo. I signed up for it. I got the details from Larry. I signed up for it. And I kind of didn't look at it for the first week or two. And next thing I see all the banter going back and forward. And I was like, oh, Christ, I can't end up bottom of this. I said, so I was in there.
You were like Everton, Hoagie. You were comfortable mid-table.
Yeah. That'll do me. First season, you know. You don't want to set the bar too
high. You weren't in trouble like Arsenal. Like, you know, that's the one thing that keeps on giving is Arsenal Football Club, yeah.
Thanks to Landers for taking up the slack there. Fair play to you.
Yeah, Landers. That's okay, Hoagie. But next year is coming around the corner now, my friend.
Cheers, Hoagie.
See you, lads.
Thanks, Hoagie. Good luck.
See you, Brian. Don't mind the bottom of the table now. You know, it's all about the top of the table. And come here, do you know what? There's one bit of positivity over the weekend, right?
Okay, it was a three-way shootout between myself, Larry, and TJ.
I'm talking about Spurs.
You were top of the table again this morning.
Big match Wednesday night. Big match Wednesday night.
You slipped up big time now yesterday. Bad draw.
Actually,
it was actually a good draw, not like Man United's draw.
It was a great draw against City. Massive draw. Great result.
Useless match. It was the worst match I ever saw.
Dylan, I'm not sure if you saw it. I saw it there on social media this morning before we came on air that Liverpool legend Gerard Houllier passed away, actually. I'm not sure if you've seen that.
Did he?
Yeah. 73 years of age. 73, three young men.
You want to watch yourself, Matt?
Maradona and Houllier, no, like.
Yeah.
Before Christmas.
In fact, there's a few gone. A few gone this year. Paolo Rossi.
That's right.
One of the greatest strikers, huh? 82 brilliant. World Cup. What a man. Lads, the curtain raiser, Antrim, you wouldn't be too obsessed with their chances in the Liam McCarthy after watching it, but they're a good bit better than that, I'd say. Both teams, in fairness.
Yeah.
The tension.
There's the tension there.
I felt that.
But, and you know, the funny thing is that they've played, that was their fourth time playing this year, and Antrim have beaten them three times. I suppose there was a bit of interpretation, like that if they got done on the final day for the promotion into the championship, like into the Lee McCarthy, would have been awful in that respect. But I thought they were physically a way bigger than Kerry. I thought there were a few pounds now, like, you know, and I think, like, you know yourself, the Lee McCarthy, there's no player carrying any bit of poundage, you know, like they're slim, they're really, really fit, well conditioned. But I thought they were a better team, Anthony, over the 70 minutes. Neil McManus, great to see him back from injury. And he had a big bearing. And I mean, to bring a fella off the bench like that too, and make a big contribution of 4 points in a game where 22 was scored. But again, out of the two matches, only one goal scored in the All-Ireland final. You know, is there something in that as well? It's a bit funny, isn't it?
Yeah, TJ, you're taking a step back for a year from a club scene and that kind of our inter-county scene as well. Would you be encouraging your teams to take their points now anymore? Like, that's the way it's going, isn't it?
It certainly is. And you need to be hitting like mid-20s and such. When we were playing Dillo, it was like if you hit 15, 16 points, it was a good day. You always have two goals with it, right?
13.
13, okay. But I said the whole game management and that whole education around it and the video analysis has gone huge, taking a score. And you probably also have to give teams a lot of credit for the defence. They just don't let you create that. And I'm sure you would probably come to this whole black card thing again in a while, right? Like in terms of you just don't let the overlap develop. We saw Will O'Donoghue yesterday with a masterclass there on Stephen Bennett again, just won't let him in. But it's a little bit of everything. But certainly, if your team can hit 25, 26, 30 points, why not keep tipping them over?
Limerick had 40 scoring opportunities yesterday, yeah. 40 shots, and Waterford only 22, which is a bit surprising. Like, you know, just scoring chances, that's a big bearing as well, TJ. But
yeah, massive. But to go back to the Kerry game, I was fierce impressed with Antrim early doors. Certainly the first quarter, I thought the use of the ball was very good. They were definitely well coached. They were trying to do the right thing. To me, they were impressive. I think the goal, which was a little probably a mistake, I know you were saying the Sun Dela was a factor. It definitely kept Kerry in the game up to half time. But I thought I was fierce impressed with Antrim. There is a pressure when you've beaten a team three times already in the season and you're expected to win. And like in the final, like Antrim today are all about winning. They need to bask in the glory of that. It's a huge result for them. Great result for Kerry too, in the sense that where they came from the previous year to get that sort of a role to get into the final. Obviously, nobody likes to lose. They certainly have work to do, but at the same time, you wouldn't want to be raining their parade this morning and today. Like, I mean, great result for Antrim. They need to build this massive tradition up there. Yeah, like
definitely. I'd be friendly with Darren, and I texted him last night. Said, "Well done." And he's kind of said, "Not too pretty, Dela," but I said, "Pretty doesn't matter in finals and Croke Park." I said, "You get the job done," and they have work to do to go up into that Leinster Championship now. But they did a lot of good work as well. I mean, like Shane Conway really never got a grip on the game, as we all felt.
No, wasn't influential.
Of course, a big day for him as well. You can do whatever you want to college's level, but that's stepping into Croke Park.
And didn't he look very light as well, looking at him on the television now? Like, you know, I seen him a good bit in with UCC and the club championship, and he didn't really look out of place. So that's a bit of a concern for me. When I see the size of the opposition, and even when you look at the Limerick and Waterford lads afterwards, they're way bigger, physically more conditioned. So, but the other thing they allowed about yesterday was Liam Gordon and his umpires, and it's fair play to the umpire who spotted that the ball hadn't fully gone over the line for the goal opportunity. But
Don't log maintained it was over the line, man.
No, not a hope. But like, this is where the technology comes into it. Don't mind him. He does get it wrong every now and then, like, even though
I thought he backed the goalie, like.
Yeah, that was hard to believe. But the goalies union are always coming up. But the technology is there, Anthony. And, you know, if that
was... But
if it went upstairs, would it be sorted in 30 seconds? It would.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there would be nobody give out about it. And even... I can't even remember, was there anything in the game yesterday that we would have had to go to technology for?
But Mark, I don't think the technology is there for goals at the moment. Obviously, it's there in the Premiership and you can bring it in. But Hawkeye at the moment isn't in place for goal scoring opportunities.
But it was there for Brian Hogan
bringing balls from behind the bar last year, obviously catching balls. So surely they can put a beam down.
But that's over the bar. I don't believe, maybe Larry will confirm it, but I don't think it's in place for goals. It's not, no.
Larry, will you go up and organise that beam there, will you?
Would you not be happy enough with the video that we saw, the little camera in the corner of the goals that showed the ball last night that it wasn't over the line?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Even just visually, it's
not in place. I remember we played Kilkenny in 2014 and there was nearly a pushover try before half time. There were Davy Breen and like we were kicking to the referee and he was kind of saying, no, it's not there for goals. So Hawkeye doesn't at the moment for goal chances. What I would like to ask you guys is, the idea of Joe McDonagh before the Senior All-Ireland Hurling Final, to me, makes an awful lot of sense. It's a great reward for those players making the commitment that they make to play on the biggest day of all. Would it cause a problem for minors? Would it cause a problem for tickets? I suppose that's one of the questions we have down the road. But I think those players are entitled to their day in the sun on the biggest day of all.
Yeah, well, it's the secondary competition, you know, and the stake... The prize at stake is a promotion into the Liam McCarthy. So, and it was great to see the standard of game beforehand and afterwards to see how will the winners compete? How will they go in the Liam McCarthy? So, I think that the fact that the minor has gone down to 17, TJ, I prefer to leave that away from the Senior All-Ireland game. I think it was 80,000 people at a match. I think it could have a bit of an effect mentally on lads, both their performance, and maybe if they don't perform in the match and stuff like that, what kind of a scar does it leave on them afterwards? I think those younger lads are still in their informative years, and they're going to get away better and stuff like that. So I don't think there's any need to put them under that kind of pressure in front of a big, large crowd on an Ireland final day. So I would say continue.
And the other thing that surprised me yesterday was, and I didn't know the answer for a while, was the white ball. Like I said, it was nearly unusual. And I saw somebody on social media said that the white slitter had been used in Joe McDonagh for all games, which it didn't make sense to me. Why bring in a yellow slitter and not using Joe McDonagh? But yeah, it didn't make a whole lot of difference.
It struck me first Saturday night, TJ, when I sat down, I got to Dublin, and I was up on time for the under-20 match. Yourself, your crowd and Max Crowd played out a draw, and then Max Crowd won it with sideline balls. Where'd you get the two giants he brought on, Mac?
I said a farmer footballer's it's a
yeah. Well, I tell you, they're take sideline balls in there, man.
You meant a serious operator.
Yeah, they're good players, but I tell you, they turned the game. But the white ball there, and then the Camogie final, white ball, and actually forgot about that then, and got the lovely honour of bringing out the old cup onto the plinth. It had to be pre-recorded now because the Joe McDonagh would have been too tight to Liam McCarthy, but because we were the 25-year team and we didn't get to celebrate like we had planned. I'm sure
you'll get an opportunity, Anthony.
Later on today, a substantial meal somewhere, Mac. Yeah.
You have an opportunity. There's a seat there over there on Shannon's side.
Yeah.
Whether a clear fellow would be accepted inside Limerick today.
Oh, no, we'd be delighted to talk to him today.
I'm one of their own. I went in there in 2014. Like, so didn't win, I think, till 2018. So the cups were up on the podium where we were, the RT podium, and your man says, leave it in the box, the steward. And he said, because in case people stop you, take pictures. And she doesn't know I'm in there, like, take pictures. But Brian Culbert and Brittany Cummins were setting up. So I said, hey. And they were setting up, the white slitters. And that's what struck me. I says, he's still using white as well for the Joe McDonagh. Oh, yeah, he says, only Lee McCarthy. But sure, I don't know. It's strange why it wasn't rolled out across the board, like, wasn't it? Because the idea being that we could easily see the ball better. And anyway, that was the way. Yeah. That was a nice touch, actually, bringing out the old Liam McCarthy, putting it on the plinth on behalf of the boys. And fair play to him.
Declan Hannan has joined your esteemed company, Dello.
Yeah, and he's likely to join Christy Ring, I'd say, in the near future. I'd say the way things are looking. Christy's only one lifted three times. Jimmy Cooney caught me out there in that one as well, but
just Jimmy's getting it hard this morning,
desperate.
Jimmy, yeah, I'd like to go up and meet him the next few weeks now. No, Jimmy's lovely.
The bouncers that took him off the field should be shot.
Yeah, absolutely. The game could have been played on, but anyway,
they never gave him a chance, Taylor. Like, I'll somebody need to say, come here, Jimmy, you're 3 minutes short there, my friend. Throw in the ball and drive on, like, there wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're gone back 22 years there on that one, but
I know.
Yeah, it still resonates. I suppose, lads, great stuff as usual. We have to congratulate the man that's muted. I don't know what prize we have for him. We'll have to come up with something, but Larry Ryan, of the Temple Derry Kenyans, we have to say a huge congratulations. You were money on, according to Joe Sword, once he looked at your team to get over the line. And Keane Lynch then went passing balls to Kyle Hayes instead of sticking them in the net himself. I said, well, you put it in yourself, Keane. Well done, Larry. Well done. Well done. You picked well. And your tweet last night at Donald Burke from Dublin should be a contender for an All-Star.
Give him harder to hear.
Big time. Yeah.
But Landers, I have the wooden spoon at home. So that'll have to be presented as well. People want to see pictures of this and they don't want to see them virtually. So we've got on gloves and a mask. We're going to do it like...
Well, come here. Organise the Christmas party now someplace that was safe and sound, and bring Davey Fitz as holiday with you, your grand. I'll accept it this year. Just mark my card now for next year.
Well, do you know another thing about Hurley's ads? Gary Ryan used to fix my hurleys all my life in Clarecastle. I haven't met Gary in years. Like, we moved out west and Gary was working in Ross, and I don't know where he lives now, but knock at the door, and yeah, and I was upstairs and the missus came down and said, I think it's Gary Ryan outside. And let's head into my 95 hurley, which I thought was lost after the 2005 county final, because Stephen Sheedy was using it and he broke it in two halves. And I searched the field looking for the two pieces of hurley. Sheedy said, we used to call it the wand for the crack. Then Gary arrived and he had picked up and he glued it together. No, don't hit a ball, as he said. Around to you. I said, no danger of that, innit? But there it was. He had varnished and he had renamed. And it was a lovely touch Saturday morning. Put me in great form for the weekend, I have to say, straight away. So,
yeah, Liam, wasn't they used it after 95? Because the way you were wearing them there for a while, 97, 98, 99, they definitely wouldn't have survived.
I didn't use the wand, TJ, for those ones.
I was thinking as much.
Was that the one you struck the late free with in 1995?
You better believe it was the one,
yeah.
No, I used it in the 2003 county final. That was my last match. I played against the Welland, the Munster club, after. I didn't even use it in that. I wanted to keep it. And then Sheedy used to break every hurley that God ever gave him. Like, he just couldn't. He was just animal. He arrived out to me the morning of the 205 hurley and he said, you give me the wand, you know? He says, you better win the match. Like, so the first puck out, and then John Casey pucked it down the field, and Sheedy was marking Frank Lohan, centre forward. Frank centre back for Shannon, and he just pulled with one hand, like, and all you could see was one end of the wand going off about 20 yards. Like, you know, it was awful. Yeah, Larry, yeah. We've other results. Did one of our lads win the overall, Larry?
No, I think they just came up short. Kieran McKillian won our one with an incredible score, 1-6-6-8.
He was second, was he?
Yeah, I had Gerard Hegarty in my team, Della. I thought I might catch you there, but you just.
Yeah.
I thought I might
Graham Mull, I put in Graham Mull and I thought to put in Tom Morrissey just before the semi final.
Yeah.
And then a wrong call there, Mull. Mull, if you're listening, we love you.
Yeah. I thought I might catch you because Gerard Hegarty was a big scorer for me, but I didn't have Aaron Gilland captain, so I'm sorry, Aaron. I probably should have picked you as captain start of the year. We don't want to know, Mark.
Jordine, would you believe it? Actually, he's young for the Cormac. It was involved in the on the junior side of it, but he sent me all the killer results there. So, Chloe Sigerson, she plays Camogie for Cork, and she has topped the killer contingent. So there's one.
We will ask the killer one as well.
Nah, we left that to Patrick Mulcahy. You know, my man. And then, you know what he says to me? I forgot to log on to do the transfers before the semi-finals. Go way out of that, Mull, like. And he lives on the fucking Twitter feed, like, you know?
Oh, he's your main spy, like.
Yeah, the guy's slam winner, I think, at the junior section. I think young Evan O'Connor. So I said, I'd be talking about him three or four times already. So he kept his lead and he won the junior section. So great competition, in fairness to the lads. Good interest, even for watching other games and picking players. So, yeah, great job.
Great hurling club up in Tyrone there, on Roa. Fairness, some. Great idea. Go on, Larry.
Yeah. Kieran was hit by a point, actually, for the overall. Yes. Stephen Kelly from Ackle was the overall winner.
And there you go. Not a hurling stronghold, Ackle.
We had three lads in the top four, though, of the overall. And So I'd say we'll sort out prize for the first three, anyway.
I have three prizes at home. I have a beautiful Mourne Hurley, and I have the two packs of Slither socks, grips as well. And I have a wooden spoon already. We know where the wooden spoon is going. Then Butler Hurley's have promised us prizes as well, haven't they?
Yeah, Butler's. And I'll go into the office and have a rummage around. Surely a few hurling books have arrived in the office in the last few weeks. I can
great.
Passage J got onto me there this morning.
I never entered. Would you believe that?
I forgot about it as well. We should have put in the fact. But anyway, between the jigs and the reels, they still haven't got the results counted because there were so many entries came in after the podcast and they sent a really nice text to say, thanks very much. We got a huge entry. We're announcing the winners tonight and they have money now for the pitch maintenance from the entry. So, well done. Super stuff. Well done, people.
Dylan, before you finish up, I'm not sure if you got to see any Camogie match on Saturday night.
Saw it all, teacher.
Unbelievable performance of work rate. Real old Kilkenny there, wasn't there?
Oh my God, it was as tough a game, lads. I know they've changed the rules And we saw Inagiri going, leave the rules at the end of it.
Yeah.
By God, it's as tough as anyone, like, you know. And God, Sheenie Mac, it's a war of attrition now, isn't it? As you said, it was Kilkenny, like the hurlers, like.
Yeah.
Incredible. But, and so you know, I mentioned Denise Gall, the score she got last week, and she wasn't having a great first half herself and Ann Dalton, who'll be the big hitters maybe for them. But Denise Gall really came up with the goods in the second half, like, and the penalty, could you strike a penalty home any better than that? Yeah, like, yeah, buried to the bottom corner. And yeah, after losing three finals, even though we don't normally have too much sympathy from now that Hoagie's gone off the line. But, like, you know, wasn't it a great story, really? That,
yeah, but their commitment to the tackle was ferocious. I've never witnessed a Camogie match like it. And the rule change and the players and the managers were looking for the rule changes. But I thought the referee, when the overall context of the game, the amount of stuff he let go, I thought the award of the penalty was pretty easy now, to be fair. And the play had gone on two or three balls before he blew for the free, which I thought was a bit unusual as well. And I'm just wondering, was there somebody in his ear? But, you know, to mention, you know, you mentioned the other, the front, Aoife Dial, I thought was outstanding as well. She got 4 points from play out of 14. Massive return from the young girl. But the overall thing, it was a very enjoyable game. I sat down and watched it. You know, in the past, you might have got it up and went away from it, but it was actually enthralling, I thought, and it was really, really committed stuff. It was brilliant, brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I text Tommy Walsh at halftime and I says, Tommy, would it be safe to say that Grace is the fastest of the Walshes? and he didn't disagree either. So great congrats to them. And, you know, a massive amount of 20s and 21s. Your minors took a good beating, Mark, but you had a good win in the 20s.
Yeah, good win in the 20s. And like, if they got done, they would have been very, very disappointed. I thought they looked like they were going to win the game for most of it. But in true Limerick spirit, and I suppose all boats rise together, because the minors were very, very impressive on Saturday against what we thought was a good Cork minor team as well. So we'd be very disappointed. Disappointed with the manner of the last Morton being beaten, because we were beaten by 12 points. And, you know, I know they were caught by two soccer goals, like, but they looked a bit dispirited, which is disappointing. And I know that the manager and his selectors won't be happy at all with that outcome. But look, hats off to Limerick. The under-20s now, I mean, we really, like, we'll probably be playing Tip, I'd say, or Tip are playing Waterford on Tuesday night. You know, Daly will be, I think, tugging out in that match. And just, is that the reason why that fixture is on Tuesday night? I think Tip will probably get to the final against us, and, you know, it'll be a shootout again between the two teams. But, you know, Cork need to get some bit of silverware, Anthony, if they could.
Yeah, I thought Derek Connery really showed his class again, didn't he? Good for Hurler.
But they're back in his right position.
Wing back.
He's a right halfback. And I'm telling you now, the management's that picked him wing forward just is not, it's not fair to pick fellas in the wrong positions. He's no Kyle Hayes. Dennis Ring did it previously as well with him. Do you know?
Yeah.
Picking him wing forward and asking him to play as a kind of a third midfielder stroke sweeper. He's a class hurler, real class hurler. Knows where to be, a bit like yourself and Liam Doyle in your day. Not maybe blessed with 100% pace, not a Kyle Hayes job, right?
Excuse me?
A bit like Dickie Hannon, let me say, right?
Okay, I'll take that.
You know, would you happy enough on that?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, but a fantastic stick man, Connery. And right half back is his best position. And if you're talking about succession planning and getting the best players on the field, he should be left wing back now and let him settle into a position for himself.
Yeah, yeah. Loads to talk about, lads, and great show again today, I think. Larry?
Lads, before you go there, and it mightn't be the final farewell yet for 2020, but we might come back for a Christmas festival if we can organise it. But just on behalf of everybody on the sports desk and all the listeners during the year, just a thanks to the three of you for all your efforts. Over and above, in fairness, you kept a lot of people going over the year walking, and we've had a lot of great messages in. I think even when there was no action, he kept it going, in fairness, kept it pucked out, as they say. And just thanks very much. And to the other lads as well, Ken Hogan, Brian Hogan, Jer Cunningham, they've all been great whenever they've come in.
Derek
McGrath, of course. Am I forgetting anything
else? Tony Brown. Tony Brown one morning.
And all the lads on the streaming as well. It was a pleasure. And it was an education for me here to be listening to you for the year.
What I'd say, Larry, is I knew...
You picked up a lot, Larry, now, to be fair.
What I'd say, Larry, is I knew myself and these two fellas would get on well together. I didn't just know how well. and if there's ever a Christmas party organised, it could be dangerous. Like, we'd want to leave it maybe the new year. The vaccine is run out. It could be a 2 day. It could be a 2 day. Although I don't know if I'm able for 2 days anymore.
Dillo, I was going to finish with a hat tip to my neighbour, John Kiley. He has changed the game. He has revolutionised Limerick.
Would you be close distance-wise away from each other?
Well, see, I'm living just over the road from Garry's Play, actually in Gelbilly Parish. John's probably about maybe three or four miles, I'd say, up the road.
He's a Gelbilly man, like, isn't he?
He's a Gelbilly man, yeah. Yeah, he would play football and hurl with Gelbilly and he would have joined us. Like, so, yeah, proud Gelbilly man. He's done an awful lot for the place there. But just what he's done has been incredible. Like you wouldn't have foreseen this a number of years ago. Like, to win in one All-Ireland Savage, to take this team to a level that we haven't seen before, like uncharted waters, really, really successful, powerful team. That's the envy of the country. So that's not easy. Like I said, sometimes it's taken for granted. Like I said, whether it's players or management, but he's the leader of the ship. He keeps inspiring them. So for me, to finish with a hat tip to my neighbour, John Kiley.
Absolutely, TJ. And you know what the great sign is? He's a fella in the morning now. You'd love to go for a pint with him, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
That's the type of guy he is. And we can't say that about too many people, you know. John Kiley, I met him. I was doing a bit for the news and he was doing a bit of Marty Morrissey. And I said, well, I see you to Corson. We're off. It's called After Dillo. And he does the bear at the Galbally Corson every year. Because the family tradition. And what a down to earth, you know, honest to God guy, rounded chap. And this is the success I think that people should look at. You don't have to be a Hitler or you don't have to be, you know, he's ruthless when he needs to be, but he's a really decent bloke.
Actually,
and
the last
players are playing for him, aren't they?
Absolutely, 100%. Given that they're all, the last time I went for a pint with him, we struggled to get home. Frankie was in the front of the taxi going home. We really struggled. The taxi driver didn't really know where we lived. And I don't know. There was a communication issue between us and the taxi driver anyway. But we got there. Tremendous guy.
It's dangerous country out there.
Dangerous country.
Okay, brilliant stuff, lads. I think there's talk of a Christmas special, but Larry has loads of work to do on that. So we'll bid you a farewell from the championship. If there's a Christmas special, there's a Christmas special. If there doesn't be. I want to wish you all a fantabulous Christmas, as I said on TV yesterday. And that's what we all wish. But if there's a Christmas special, we'll let you know, Twitter followers, and Pam Mulcahy be able to tell Macklanders.
All right. Limerick.
Up Limerick, TJ. Well done.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.